Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher, 8:06 on this Tuesday, January 5th. We've got 25 degrees here in Old Town Park City. On the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Erica Martin. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie, and Happy New Year to you. Happy New Year to everybody in Park City, Senate Wasatch County. I am loving today's forecast. I was able to show it so much this morning on ABC 4 and on CW. We were showing how gorgeous Main Street looks with those flurries still coming down. You did not get out of those 20s for today, though. As you mentioned, 25 degrees currently. Early this morning, we were seeing about 28 degrees. That was about 5:45, maybe 6:20 a.m. And then we are probably just going to top out in the upper 20s. That's just about it. But the good news is that we're seeing some flurries for today and then clearing out by the second half of the day. The breezes will start to diminish as the frontal boundary continues to move eastward, so good news there. Temperatures for your Wednesday in the mid-30s as a ridge of high pressure develops, so lots more sunshine there. But then clouds starting to develop by Thursday, really overnight Wednesday into Thursday as we track pretty much the ridge of high pressure starting to break down a bit. A weak system moves in, so it looks like we could see some snow showers overnight Wednesday into Thursday, mainly snow flurries. And then on Friday, another opportunity for some showers, likely overnight Saturday into Sunday morning. Keep in mind temperatures are going to be in the teens for the next couple of nights, low, I'd say maybe 15, 16, 17 degrees respectively on Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And then the high on Saturday is only going to top out in the mid-20s, again, with an opportunity for some snow showers. By Sunday, you'll see a mix of sun and clouds. And, of course, it looks like we'll be tracking another opportunity for snow showers later next week. But actually, Monday and Tuesday looks like we're under the influence of a ridge of high pressure. So right now, we're mainly thinking about what's happening for today and those light snow flurries. That's actually making Park City look really beautiful right now.
Yeah, finally. Thanks.
Thanks, Leslie.
KPCW News Time now, 8:08. And with a look in the backcountry, on the phone with us from the Utah Avalanche Forecast Center, it's Nikki. Good morning.
Good morning. So yesterday there was one new human-triggered avalanche in the backcountry. It was off the Park City Ridgeline on the east aspect and 9,200 feet on a zone known as the Sound of Music. The soft slab avalanche failed down on the persistent weak layer facets. It's 120 feet wide and ran 200 feet down. It was unintentionally triggered on lower on the slope. Today we're going to have three issues. So that persistent weak layer, so that weak faceted snow on the ground, wind drifted snow, and new snow. So we've been talking about it. We've got dangerous slabs of snow hanging on many aspects, west to north to east, on all mid and upper elevation terrain. This morning we added a huge stressor to the fragile snowpack in the form of really high winds, up to 80 miles per hour, and that new snowfall that the weather just talked about. We don't know if this is going to be the tipping point that's going to cause the snowpack to become unglued, but we do know that avalanche danger and the likelihood of avalanches are going to be on the rise. If you're new to dealing with persistent weak layers in general, head to a lower angle slope with nothing steep above, overhead, or adjacent, and you can dig to the ground and see that strong over weak. The other issue I talked about is that wind-drifted snow. So like I said, winds have been cranking for the last 2 days, up to 80 miles per hour. Strong winds in combination of a few new inches of snow will have drifted snow and formed fresh slabs. West through north through east, I would give extra caution as triggering an avalanche in the wind-drifted snow on those aspects will likely break more deeply into that weak, faceted snow beneath, causing an avalanche 2 to 4 feet deep. The final issue is new snow, so if you find somewhere in protected terrain that's not affected by those winds, you could see some soft fluffs or point releases in the mid and upper elevation terrain. Those are normally just break at your feet and not a huge concern, but if you did get caught in a terrain trap, like a gully or a creek, it could pile up much deeper. So pay attention. Today we're going to have a high avalanche danger on steep upper elevation slopes facing west through north through east for those fresh wind drifts and new snow that sit on top of that weak facet of snow. There's a considerable danger on upper elevation southerly slopes and mid elevation west through north through east. And the remaining elevations are going to have a moderate danger. Today stay off of and out of slopes over 30 degrees or steeper at mid and upper elevation terrain.
Hey, just real quick on the Sound of Music avalanche, looking at the photos on the webpage here, it looks like the skier had skied the slope and had pulled over to, I don't know, if the ski came off or something, but that's when the avalanche release was. He or she able to get out of the way?
Yeah, he was safe, but we've been seeing a lot of these avalanches being triggered remotely from below. So that's what we talk about. You don't want to be beneath these steep slopes because you could trigger it, you know, lower on the slope. We saw that off the monitors a couple days ago as well. So, yeah, you can trigger it from even lower down on the slope.
Okay. Hey, thanks, Nikki.
Yeah, have a good one.
It's 8:11 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. This is the KPCW Local News Hour. Stay tuned. Coming up, we'll be checking in with Summit County Manager Tom Fisher for the first meeting of the County Council this year. Later on, General Manager of Woodward, Chris Gunnerson, known as Gunny, has details about the second season for Woodward Park City. And finally, Park City School District Business Administrator Todd Hauber talks about the legislature's initiative to give teacher bonuses and the passage of Amendment G and how that will impact education funding this year. Stay tuned. News time now, 8:13. Good morning. Well, the swearing-in of elected Summit County officials is set for today, and the council will be meeting tomorrow in regular session starting at 3 o'clock via Zoom. On the phone with the preview is Summit County Manager Tom Fisher. Good morning, Tom, and happy 2021.
Good morning. Happy 2021 to you.
So is there some legal technicality that oath-taking has to happen live and can't happen on Zoom?
Well, it's a combination of things. Yes, it is indicated in law that they do need to occur live, but it had more to do with Judge Kerr's schedule and the safety of everybody in order to do that. We didn't want everybody gathering in one place to do that. So we decided actually to conduct those oaths yesterday afternoon in Judge Kerr's court area. It included the judge, the person getting sworn in, and Annette Singleton as the witness and the notary to notarize the document. And that's how we conducted them. And we even had plexiglass up so that people could be protected from each other.
Oh, okay. So it's already happened then.
It's already happened, and we'll just confirm those oaths live on the meeting today or tomorrow, and the chair will acknowledge that those have already happened, and there'll be information in the packet showing that each of those oaths have already happened.
All right. The council also names its chair and vice chair the first meeting of the year. Customarily, the vice chair steps up to that top position. So is that what's going to happen? And who is that?
I believe Glenn Wright is the vice chair presently. I don't see any difference than tradition happening this year. That's what I've heard discussed.
All right. And then the schedule of meetings. Any idea if the council will stay on Zoom for all of 2021, or do you expect to get back to in-person meetings?
We are certainly planning that we get back to in-person meetings at some point during the year. We would like to certainly modify the way we do those. We've learned a lot concerning the broadcast of meetings. And what we can do to increase public involvement, and just those that can listen in on meetings when we have them provided electronically. So we would like to do that in the future, even though we might move to a live format. So we're figuring that part out. And then, of course, that has an implication in regards to the technology with where we meet. So do we have to make some decisions about do we have a duplicate system both in the Snyderville Basin and in Colville for those meetings, or do we do it in one place? We haven't figured that part out yet, but I would imagine we'll be looking towards mid-year or sometime after, soon after that, as we know more about the rollout of vaccines and when we'll have some levels of immunity within our community and in the state in order to project when those live meetings will happen again.
All right. Well, I know at least one council member, and I would say KPCW prefers not having to drive to Colville. it's just a lot more time effective because we can just skip over those items that, you know, we don't feel like we need to listen in on. So you're saying that there will be some sort of hybrid?
I don't think we would ever go back to not having some type of broadcast of our meetings and the ability to somehow interact. I don't know how that's going to be yet because it's easy when you're sitting in front of a computer. It's not as easy when you're in a room and you have to do that. And you're modifying a room to handle the technology that could be available to do that. I know there's solutions out there, and we've got our IT folks working on that. So, yeah, we would like to offer that. It is time consuming, but you know, the other part of that is under state law, we're required to hold meetings in the county seat. And the county seat is Colville. So we have to do that. And we modify that ourselves by holding some of our meetings in the Snyderville Basin.
Sure.
But right now, under the emergency authority and the emergency laws for the pandemic, we're allowed to do electronic meetings. There's probably going to be some direction within the legislature on what we're able to do in the future as well.
All right, let's talk a little bit about committee assignments. All of the council members from last year are still here, of course, except for those committee roles filled by Kim. Do you expect any significant changes?
I think there's going to be some robust discussion about it. I mean, we have not met as a group, or the council has not met as a group to discuss their committee assignments in total yet, at least not that I know of. And, you know, I imagine there's going to be some people expressing that they'd like to be doing some of the same things, but with Kim Carson leaving, there's some openings that need to be filled and some significant ones. And although it would be natural to, or it seemingly natural to, just plug Malena Stevens into those roles, that might not be Malena's interest, and it might not. There might be interest in other members of the council to take on some of those things as well. So I think that's where the discussion will lie.
Well, I was going to say she's low woman on the totem pole, so she probably just gets what the other council members want to give her, no?
Well, I don't think it's looked at in a seniority perspective. I certainly guess that some members would have preference over others, but I think the council will be very interested to hear what Council Member Stevens is interested in being a part of.
Also, one blank area, the council will need to name three members for the Snyderville Transit District Board. Has anybody expressed interest in serving that so far?
Well, I think all of the members have expressed interest in transit. I mean, it is one of the big things we've got to accomplish this year, and one of the big things that we've changed over the last year that we need to continue to have council involvement in. So there might be some jockeying in perspective to that. But, you know, I have not seen a lot of competition over the 6 years I've been here for spots. I think there's a lot of deference shown. As well as some honesty about time commitments and what people can commit to, and so I think you'll see some discussion about that as well.
All right, it doesn't look like a big deal to ratify the Chalk Creek Run rezone. The council approved this back in October, so this formalizes what then?
It just formalizes the ordinance and lets the council look that over one last time. I think there were some questions, in looking over the packet, I think there were still some questions about setbacks from water courses that needed to be discussed, and I think staff will come forward with that information.
All right. A report also on state parks at Echo and Rockport. Any idea how COVID affected their summers?
Well, I can't. I have to imagine that it affected it greatly. You know, I certainly think that they were busy from the standpoint of use, because we had a lot of people in the county using our natural resources and our recreation areas, because there was less things to do elsewhere, or people were staying closer to home. But also, you know, a lot of the concessions and things like that were modified in order to deal with the COVID situation. So it'll be interesting to hear that and to hear what some of the plans are to continue some of the projects that were already working, especially the improvements up at the Echo Reservoir Campground.
Yeah. And also, it sounds like part of the discussion will be the future of the rail trail. What's being...
Well, the rail trail is always a topic. The same manager manages the Echo and Rockport State Parks and the rail trail, which is managed under the state park system. I think it'll just be an update on some of the maintenance items that have been going on. We've been in and out of discussions over the years with state parks about the rail trail, but I don't expect anything large to change this year.
All right. And then also there are the recommendations for RAP funding for recreation projects. 14 applicants recommended for a total of $950,000. Three proposals turned down flat, one for the county rodeo grounds. Why was the county's project dismissed?
Well, I think one of the reasons, I mean, if you read the staff report, it was unclear to the committee compared to some other North Summit applications what exactly the project was committing to. But, you know, at the end of the day, we have to kind of follow, the committee has to also divvy up the money in some close percentages that have been detailed in the report. And, you know, if both of the projects in North Summit had been funded, it would have greatly skewed that. So I believe they deferred to the Hanifer project, which seemed like a very solid project.
All right. And then looking at priorities for the Snyderville Basin Planning Commission, you're looking at a schedule for them to consider general plan and development code issues, everything from accessory buildings to affordable housing, in meetings from January 12th through mid-June, then followed by public hearings. So does that schedule look all right to you?
It certainly does. I think Pat and a couple of our council members have discussed it in great detail, as well as a couple of our planning commission members. It's really an attempt. You know, we haven't really been good at, I would say, we've done a decent job, but we can get better at really projecting between the planning commission and the council what the planning commission should be trying to get done during the year, on top of the regular application flow that happens for development applications, and this would lay out some expectations not only of things to get done, but kind of a schedule to get them done. So there's a little bit of predictability on when things might come through the planning commission, hit a public hearing in the planning commission, and then be broadcast up to the council for the council's work. We've got a lot of ambition in both sides of the county in regards to land use, general plans, and code amendments. So we have to be a lot more deliberate this year in order to get through that work.
All right, and then finally, I just wanted to ask you, in terms of the county extending its mask mandate, is that now covered by the mask mandate from the state, or will the county go ahead and extend its own order?
It is covered by the mask mandate of the state. I think we will be extending ours as well. It won't obviously be at this meeting because it's not on the agenda, but we will be doing that. We're caught up in a lot of different things in regards to the pandemic right now, which the focus for us is getting our vaccines rolled out. Which we're progressing very well on that. I should add, the health department is vaccinating priority groups right now, and other groups are vaccinating themselves as they get deliveries, especially the hospitals and healthcare workers. So, we'll be extending that. There is no, I'm not hearing any talk at the state level or the local level of ending the mask mandate.
All right. And I got a story from last night's health board regarding vaccines. But I'm kind of curious because I had heard from a teacher concerned that teachers have been pushed back, and we've got, you know, ski patrollers, you know, getting vaccinated. How do we decide who's more important?
Well, I mean, really, it's a matter of the priorities that the state health department is putting out. Certainly, we're trying to fill holes within that as well. You know, we're getting, you know, somewhere the first 2 weeks we've gotten about 200 vaccines a week, and I know that the health department is in contact with all three school districts, and teachers are being faculty of the school districts are starting to get programmed in for those vaccines. I just don't know what the rate's going to be at this point. So that is one of the local priorities.
Teachers?
Absolutely.
Okay. Anything else, Tom, you wanted to add?
That you mentioned the transit board and naming three council members. We also are recruiting for two at-large members for that transit board. That recruitment ends on January 13th at 5 p.m. So if anybody is interested, please get on our website and sign up.
Okay. Tom Fisher, Summit County Manager. Thank you. KPCW News Time, 8:27. And stay tuned. Coming up, we'll be talking with the general manager of Woodward, Chris Gunnarsson. First, Summit County health officials say they've got a vaccine distribution system set up and have been dispensing shots for the past 2 weeks. But Health Director Rich Bulla says they're also scrambling to adapt and deal with obstacles, given that they have not received as many doses as they hoped. As KPCW's Rick Bruff reports, the county says that the Utah Film Studio and this summer Richardson Flat will play important roles in the vaccine distribution story.
Bulla told Monday's meeting of the County Board of Health that the vaccine situation is continually evolving. Bulla and County Nursing Director Derek Moss, who's leading the clinic effort, said the county has received a total of 700 doses so far. Bulla said they wished they could have received more in last week's shipment.
We received 200, and so we're dipping in to that little bit of a surplus that we got earlier. Our plan is to try to maintain a small number of vaccines to allow for glitches in delivery and shipment that will facilitate or help us not have to cancel or pull back on clinics. The general anticipated days of increase when we'll be receiving more vaccines somewhere in the ballpark of January 17th to 24th. That's when the number of vaccines delivered to hospitals will begin to decrease because they will have hit their primary target population.
Moss said they will probably vaccinate over 300 people this week, and they've already scheduled 225 appointments. He said local citizens are enthusiastic about the vaccines. They're the Moderna vaccine, which currently requires two doses about 28 days apart. Hospitals and their health workers have received vaccine doses directly from the state. Moss was asked what priority groups have been set for the vaccines.
Actually, the majority of this wave right now is actually non-hospital healthcare workers. Okay. So our community clinics, dentists, orthodontists, physical therapists, pharmacists, those who aren't associated with IHC or the University of Utah who take care of their own clinics are comprised the majority of this wave, actually, followed by teachers and first responders.
He said the recipients over 75 years old are the next priority group. Moss said this week they're also giving doses to 60 recipients at a nursing home due to an unexpected problem. Long-term care facilities are supposed to be handled by two private entities that contracted for federal funding. But Moss and Bulla said this home hasn't been able to contact a private firm, so the county will distribute doses there this week rather than wait. Bulla also had an important message for some members of priority groups who are passing up the chance for vaccinations. He said once the deadline passes for a certain priority sector, a person in that group doesn't get a chance for a dose until the vaccines are available for the mainstream population later this year. Meanwhile, Bulla said that the Utah Film Studio near Quinn's Junction is beginning operations this week as a distribution pod. He said it will use drive-through lanes and is invitation only based on the current priority groups. He said the facility will probably be used into February. Later on, Bulla said they're planning to use Richardson Flat as a mass vaccination site, possibly operational starting in March, April, or May. He said it will be a tent city with several drive-through lanes, and Bulla said it could dispense over 1,000 doses a day. For KPCW, I'm Rick Bruff.
We've got 25 degrees here in Old Town Park City. Looks like the snow showers have let up for a little bit here, but we are expecting snow showers between now and noon. Expected high today of about 27 with clear skies by tonight, 13 the overnight low. We should see some sunshine tomorrow and a high of 36. Well, Woodward Park City is open for its second season and has a new general manager, Chris Gunnarsson. He joins me now on the phone to tell us what's new at Woodward. Good morning to you, Gunny.
Good morning. How are you, Leslie?
I'm doing well. So you came on board when?
I came on board in September. I think we spoke probably within 2 weeks of me first coming on board. And thanks for having me back, by the way. Happy New Year.
Yeah, you too. So Woodward, of course, opened for its second winter season on Thanksgiving. With the exception, though, of the shutdown that was due to the COVID concerns, you were open all summer, pretty much, weren't you?
There was a period that Woodward Park City was closed for about 2 months in April and part of May, and then reopened for most of the summer. When I came on board, you may recall, we were aggressively working on our mountain biking plan, which was really intended to launch for next season. A lot of the new stuff we're building up on the mountain, but heavy emphasis on creating a phenomenal experience and a brand new business. Like you said, we reopened for the second winter season on Thanksgiving, but we celebrated our 1 year anniversary on December 14th. So we just barely beat the 1 year mark, and our focus continues to be two things. One being a highly responsible member and partner in the community to protect the well-being of our staff and our guests, and two, to provide a responsible, fun way to have all kinds of different experiences in sport and lifestyle. And so far, that's what we've been doing.
Great. So can you tell us what's different at Woodward for its winter season from a year ago?
We made some expansions on the mountain, specifically around our beginner experience. We created a new run called Easy Rider that's now the easiest way off the mountain, top to bottom. We've expanded our Peace Park, which is our non-linear, very creative, very intuitive, kind of all things to all people terrain park, freestyle terrain park. And we've continued to add new programs and lessons, especially for younger kids and beginners. And each day, or actually I should say each week, we try and add or open something new, something different.
Yeah. So, I mean, what's available to do outside? You've got one chairlift and what else?
Well, we've got one chairlift that serves top to bottom on the hill. We've also got our teaching progression carpet, which also is accessing our two progression areas. We've got our two carpets that access our tubing area. So we have tubing, we have skiing and snowboarding. Actually, this year we've added these Snow-Go snow bikes that are pretty cool. I carved around the other day with Tim Brenwald, our powder COO, and that's something new that we've added. So we're trying to constantly create just different types of fun experiences, whether you're just out to have fun or you want to try and learn first time ever on skis or snowboard, or if you're a top-tier athlete and you're working on, you know, high-performance tricks, and really everything in between.
Yeah, so what do you have outside then for kind of those high-performance folks?
Well, this weekend, January 9th, we'll be opening up our mainline freestyle terrain park that is definitely aimed at the higher-end caliber athletes. And I have to tell you that in the state of Utah, we've had all of them there since we've opened. So it's been great because each week we've opened something new up. Now we'll be opening up our more advanced park to complement our lower-level freestyle terrain features as well as our beginner experience. Then we have a whole sequence of continuing to open up our big air training area, our half pipe training area. And so as the season progresses, as the snow keeps coming, we'll just keep adding more things to enhance the overall experience.
Yeah. So are these areas, are they separated pretty well from the beginners, from the advanced?
Oh, yeah. So we have, I'm very proud of this intuitive system of progression that Woodward has created, and I've been pretty instrumental in helping drive at Woodward Park City as well as some of our other Woodward properties that work towards really making a clear path, regardless of your level, whether you're totally brand new in our start park, which is all the way at the bottom of the mountain, how you then navigate a path to the Progression Park 1, Progression Park 2, up to our Progression Park 3, which is newer and starts to introduce folks to first-time hitting features like a small snow jump or a small box feature, all the way on up. And so the way we talk about it, the way we teach with our coaches, and the way we intuitively sign and mark things are all meant to allow the individual user their own sort of journey to pick their path based on their comfort level and their ability level.
So do you see more skiers or more snowboarders?
Well, it's a pretty even mix. And you know, with this next generation, it's interesting because a lot of them do both. And so, you know, what's cool is we have coaches in our progression department that do both. And I've actually seen some people will take a lesson and switch halfway through because they want to try both. And our people are ready to do that.
Yeah. So are people spending all of their time outside, or how does that work? I mean, do they come inside for a while and then go outside, or?
Well, the indoor action sports hub is and has been open throughout. In fact, even before we opened for winter operations. And so all of our, you know, long before everybody was working towards a reservation model, Woodward Park City actually opened with a reservation model. So you sign up for an indoor session in the skate park or in the trampoline area, or you sign up for a tubing session, which is obviously outdoors and winter specific, or you sign up for a lift session. And something new we launched this year is the ability to take those lift sessions. You can either get an all day out on the mountain, or you can do a 10 to 1 or a 1 to 4 or a 4 to 8 session and sort of break it up into 3 or 4 hour bite-sized chunks, if you will. We also have added to our memberships the ability to have a lift-only or outdoor membership. We call it our Woodward Mountain Park membership. So some folks, they may not be interested in coming indoors, and so they just want to have access to the lift. And so that's either a monthly membership or a one-month membership. And so we've really expanded flexible options for people here in the community or in the greater Utah region that want to come here frequently, while we still offer all of those options, both indoors and outdoors, for guests that are visiting the area.
All right. So you do the reservation is to limit certain numbers in certain areas. Is that the idea?
Yes, exactly. And we work pretty aggressively through the fall with our leadership team, as well as our Summit County health officials, to really try and figure out what those best numbers would be. Our goal is, number one, protect the well-being of our staff, our employees, and our community. And number two, offer a awesome experience. And so trying to pinpoint what those numbers in each of those areas would be, including just coming inside the building. So we have capacity restrictions that are managed both by our reservation system, which is finite. You know, once we cap out at those numbers we've set for ourselves, that's it. We've also created capacity restrictions on getting into the building. And as not fun as it is, we've had periods of time through the holidays where we actually had to restrict people from entering the building because our commitment is so strong to being really responsible to fighting this fight that we're all in together.
So what's the most popular area?
Oh, gosh, I wish I could tell you. I think they're all really popular. We have, tubing is really popular because it's so easy and accessible. But with all the upgrades we've added to the on-hill mountain, it's been kind of an unprecedented amount of enthusiasm for getting out on the hill. And obviously, you know, it's been a tough snow season so far for a lot of places. And so we've had, I'm pretty proud to say, one of, if not the best terrain parks in the country. And people have been flocking to get outdoors and be on the mountain.
Yeah. Now, can somebody go online to see if reservations are available?
Yes. If you go to woodwardparkcity.com, you can actually sort of pick your activity. Would you want to go inside? Do you want to go tubing? Do you want to go to the lift? And you can pick your reservation. You can, there's a whole host of different products available with time slots available, and it'll tell you if it's sold out or not.
Okay. And then what's next then to build outside? Because you're pretty much done on the inside, right?
Well, I don't know if I'd say that. Maybe we'll be on again sometime soon, and I'll tell you about some indoor stuff. But for outdoor, it's, as I said earlier, it's continuing to just keep expanding the experience outside. So this coming weekend, we open Mainline, our more advanced freestyle terrain park, top to bottom. In the coming weeks, we'll open our Big Air facility. After that, we'll open our half pipe. And then we just keep adding on little tweaks and things to keep staying fresh. That's all on the physical side. There's also programming efforts that we're continuously adding. So in the month of February, we'll start adding our winter camps and our winter weekend camps. And you can start looking for information for that on our website, woodwardparkcity.com. this month, a little bit later this month. And so programming, coaching, teaching, we have private lessons for young kids all the way down to ages 4 and up, and coaching clinics, and we have athlete pros constantly visiting and offering clinics. And so we just want to run the whole gamut. When you have as many different sports as we're in, with the entire spectrum of ability level from complete beginner, never ever beginner, all the way to top tier professionals, and everybody in between, we want to have amazing environments and programs that span all those different ranges. And that's what we're continuously adding.
Okay. And I heard you say you got all kinds of memberships. Can people just come up for the day?
Sure. So we have a variety of membership options, all access or just outdoor. Or if you're just a day visitor, you can purchase a single day access, and you can even purchase them in individual sessions. So maybe you only have a few hours and you just want to get out and ski, and we've got a 10-to-1 window. Or maybe you just want to go tubing for 2 hours, because that's what our tubing sessions are, 2 hours. And so those are staggered through the day. And anyone can show up. It is not limited or restricted to members. It's open and available for anybody who wants to come and participate, as long as you have a reservation and as long as you follow our rules about social distancing, heavy mask enforcement, and just being responsible in the same way that we're being responsible back to our community.
Okay. People are encouraged to pre-purchase those indoor and outdoor sessions so in advance, just so they are not disappointed when they show up. Anything else you'd like to mention?
Well, I'd just like to reinforce the same two things I've been saying. Our number one focus is protecting the well-being of our community, our staff, our guests and members who come visit us. And number two is driving a amazing experience for all types, sizes, levels, abilities, and sports. Woodward Park City has it all.
Okay. Hey, Gunny, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you, Leslie. Thanks for having me on.
It's Chris Gunnarsson, the general manager of Woodward Park City. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. It's 15 minutes now before 9 o'clock. Well, Utah lawmakers met in mid-December to reveal a proposal that would give Utah teachers a pandemic bonus of $1,500 to licensed teacher and $1,000 to other school employees. On the phone to tell us more about that and give us a look at the upcoming legislative session is Park City School District Business Administrator Todd Hallberg. Good morning, Todd. Happy New Year.
Good morning.
So let's talk, just what is the proposal, and is something that the Park City School Board supports?
With regards to the teacher bonus,
yes.
Absolutely. That's it's exciting that the legislature is taking advantage of the more positive economic outlook that they're seeing. And instead of just putting those dollars up for different ideas for legislators to advance their own particular interests, the executive appropriation and leadership said, let's do something for our teachers. They've been put in difficult circumstances, and we want to recognize all of the effort that they're making, and this is a small way in which they could recognize the teachers and staff for responding to the really tough environment that COVID has created.
Yeah, so you would be one of those that would receive $1,000 and a teacher 15?
If you want to talk to some legislators for me, that'd be great. But at this point, administrators are not participating in this particular bonus program.
Okay. So who's paying for it? Is it coming out of state funding, or do local districts have to come up with the cash?
No. This is coming out of the economic forecast for the state. So this will be income tax dollars that will be coming in.
Okay. Any idea what that price tag is going to be to pay for?
Oh, you know, I haven't sat down to figure that one out. We've got... In our ranks, we've got about 350 times 1,500. So we'd have about $500,000 coming in to help pay for those bonuses for our teachers.
Okay, so the funds will come from the district, or will they just...
From the state.
Or from the state. Okay, so it doesn't even go through your hands.
So at the end of the day, since we make payroll, it'll be an allotment to the district, which we'll then put into paychecks.
Okay, is that income for this year or last year?
You know, that's one of the details that will have to be worked out. We're not sure if these are bonus dollars that will come in the 2021 budget year, because that's the year that they're building right now, or whether it'll come through as a supplement and actually be available before June of this year. So we'll have to see what those details are when the session starts.
Yeah, and a business will often give an employee a bonus and pay the tax burden. Will that happen with this distribution?
That's another good question. I don't have that detail. Right now, we mostly know what the gross dollar amount is for each of those groups, and then we'll see how the details work out from there.
Okay. Any concern that the funds then take away from next year's education funding?
At this point, not really. We're looking at a very positive economic output and outcome for the state as a whole. So not only did the legislature set aside this $1,500 bonus and $1,000 bonus for employees of districts, they also fulfilled all of their commitments that are under House Bill 357, which is to fund enrollment growth, to fund an inflationary factor growth for the weighted pupil unit, and also put money into a working rainy day fund. So there's a large sum of money that is already being set aside for public education before the session starts.
Yeah. So any idea how this figure, this $1,500, was come up with it? Was it just based on what they think they could afford?
I'm sure it was something in that range. It's very similar to an action they took back in 2008 when they provided what was called an educator salary adjustment. So it's in the range of those types of increases that the legislature has done in the past.
Yeah. Okay. Do you have any sense if this will pass? I mean, is it going through the normal bill process? Do lawmakers have to vote on it, or is it just a done deal?
Yeah, so it'll actually go through the regular legislative process, but it was directed to be put into what's called the base funding bill. So it'll be a bill that comes out in the first couple of days of the session and will be voted on very early in the session. So it's pretty much a done deal. You know, there might be some tweaking of different aspects of it, but it's pretty much a done deal.
All right. And as we've talked about, Amendment G was passed in November's election. It did away with the requirement that all income tax collections are used specifically for education and now can be used for children and individuals with disabilities. Utah still remains at the bottom of education funding. So any idea what to expect as a result of this?
Well, if we look to the December meeting from Executive Appropriations, there is a pretty strong signal that education is still the priority from that funding source, even with Amendment G passing, because those elements of House Bill 357 are funded and will be built into the base budget bill. So there's a very strong signal that this legislature will support education with the new revenues that come in as promised. There's also, if you look at the allocations going to the other program areas that now are eligible for income tax dollars under Amendment G, there aren't any dollars allocated at this point. So I think there's still a very strong commitment for funding education, even with the amendment in place right now.
Yeah, so do you think the district will continue to see the same amount of funding, or is this freeing up money in your budget, and then the state takes care of the special education needs?
That's a good question. I don't know that we were ever responsible for those programs outside of education. We were always in a situation as public education and other state programs in competition for the dollars. This might have opened up another door for that activity to take place, but the way the basic programs of the state were funded, we were always in competition with those groups. It may have been behind more closed doors and in different ways. This just makes it more transparent.
All right. So is this only going to impact then the WPU funding?
That's what it's designed to do, is to impact the what's called the basic program, which is funded through the WPU.
Okay. What's your confidence, though, that these agreements will be kept by future legislatures? I mean, it's certainly been an issue by those who oppose the amendment.
Absolutely, and I can't speak on behalf of any future legislator or legislative session, and even legislators can't make that promise as well. All that we can see right now is that this particular legislature has made every effort to fund public education and keep the promises that they've made. Even one additional thing of funding that came out of that December meeting was the promise that the WPU would grow by 6%. So that was a commitment back in the general session, which was then eliminated during the special sessions as we were anticipating slower economic activity. They, in December meeting, restored all of that. We figured it would come back over a couple of years or maybe 5 years. They put it all back in 1 year. So in the base bill is also another promise that this legislature had made. And so it's looking very positive that they're sending every signal they can that they can be trusted and that they're holding education in the highest priority.
Yeah. So it sounds like the state wasn't hit, that the economy wasn't hit that hard by COVID-19, or certainly not to the extent that they originally thought, huh?
Correct, yeah. And so that's, we'll go through another economic forecasting round next month that takes place during the session, and that firms up the dollars that will be available for appropriations. But yeah, they're seeing that it's a positive outlook right now. You know, not as strong as it could have been, but definitely not going backwards as they look into the next 12 months of the state's income.
So what other legislative initiatives are you seeing out there at this point?
So at this point, there's a handful of bills that are coming out. There's the drinking water testing bill is coming back from last year that had failed in the House. So we can anticipate discussions around that as to how to make sure our drinking water is safe at our schools. There's different looks at how student absences are recorded by schools, wanting to make sure that mental health issues are addressed in absences and aren't considered unexcused in the state system. So they're looking at a number of things, just making sure schools are safe as we come into the next school year.
Yeah. Do we even have the drinking fountains open?
Yeah, right now they're not. So an interesting bill, but it's, you know, we're looking at long term.
Okay. So do you feel, I mean, what's your sense kind of going into this? Feeling pretty optimistic?
I am. This is a good season, despite everything else that is going on. So these are all good signals, and we'll just want to have very positive conversation with the legislature to make sure they understand what the needs are. If there is truly this kind of money available to support education, we'll want to make sure it gets into those areas that we have greatest need.
All right. Any insight into the vaccination program for Park City School District teachers?
Yeah, I think we're on the same basis as the rest of the state. Once they figure out what that distribution pattern is, we'll participate fully and make sure we have vaccines available to our teachers and staff.
Okay. Everybody healthy coming back into school?
For the most part. Mm-hmm. I think we're ready to get school going. Okay. In fact, we started yesterday, so right. I hope we're ready.
Yeah. Okay. Anything else you want to mention?
I appreciate the time today.
All right. Thank you, Todd. Todd Halber is the School District Business Administrator for the Park City School District. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. Republican Spencer Cox called for unity, that after being sworn in as Utah's first new governor in more than a decade. Yesterday, Cox denouncing misinformation and division that he says have further taken hold throughout the pandemic. The new governor says it's not too late, and he called on the state's residents to join together. Cox succeeds Republican Governor Gary Herbert, who chose not to run for re-election after more than a decade in office. Cox became Herbert's lieutenant governor back in 2013, and he won the gubernatorial election in November. The outdoor inauguration was held at an open-air amphitheater in Ivins, Utah. And Congressman Blake Moore has been sworn in as a member of the 117th Congress to represent the 1st District of Utah in the U.S. House of Representatives. Congressman Moore was joined by his wife, Jane, and his eldest son, Max, as he took the oath of office at the U.S. Capitol on Sunday. In a prepared statement, Moore said he's grateful for the opportunity to represent Utah, and he looks forward to, quote, championing aspirational, inclusive, and pro-growth ideals to the U.S. House of Representatives. A native of Ogden, Moore graduated from the University of Utah after serving a mission for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints in Seoul, South Korea, and earned a master's in public policy and administration at Northwestern University. He has worked for small businesses and in the foreign service, experiences he says that will help guide his work on domestic and foreign policy. Moore and his wife spent time in Southeast Asia and Washington, D.C. before moving back to Utah to take a position with Cicero Group, a Utah-based consulting firm. Here, Moore led projects in education, financial services, public policy, healthcare, and transportation. He believes this background in customer service and problem solving will make a difference in Washington, D.C., and as he identifies ways to help the federal government work more like the state of Utah. Congressman Moore and his wife have three boys. Even after being sworn in, he said his most prized title is Little League Coach. Moore replaces Rob Bishop, who served the 1st District for 18 years. KPCW News Time now, 8:59.
Morning Edition and the Local News Hour with Leslie Thatcher is and the Red Ledges Community.
And just hours after the new year rang in, Summit County welcomed its first baby born at Park City Hospital. Baby girl Magnolia McGivney was born at 9:16 in the morning, January 1st, to her proud parents, Lisa and Chris. She was delivered by Dr. Tanya Bodnar just 3 hours after the parents checked into the hospital. Dad Chris says it was a great experience compared to their first kid. It was short and sweet. He added that everyone is healthy and happy. Magnolia weighed in at 6 pounds, 14 ounces. Very light flurries is what I can see now. And again, expecting some snow showers. Until about noon, currently we've got 25 degrees, expecting a high of only about 27. So we expect to see maybe an inch or two this morning. Clear skies tonight, dropping down to a low of 13. Mostly sunny tomorrow with a high of 36. And ski reporting between 5 and 7 new inches of snow, depending on when they measured. You've been listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW Park City. Stay tuned now for headline news, followed by This Green Earth. It's 9 o'clock.